And now a word from Salacious Crumb. And what he said was, you're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Hello, all you beautiful humans, and welcome to the Nerdcast by Project Nerd, episode 167. We are here. We are ready to talk about supremely inconsequential things. I am joined this evening by my friends Adam and Bob and myself, Tyler. Iggy will not be with us tonight, so that is... it's a bit of a mixed blessing, I think is what I would put it as. But Adam and Bob, how are you fine gentlemen this evening?
I'm good. How about you, Adam?
Doing all right. Getting over something. So a little under the weather, but not too bad. Not too bad.
Yeah. Don't give it to me.
I don't think we figured out how to transmit that via the internet yet,
Bob. Oh, you would come up with a way,
though. I mean, it's coming. Let's be clear. But sickness, and I haven't been feeling great either, but sickness aside, let's get into what some things have been happening. All things nerd for the last week or so. I guess, Bob, kick us off. What happened at the Bosk offices? I mean, we haven't really... Has anything new come out that did anything, or is it all things we've seen before?
Well, I tell you, if you like your movies scary, then you did pretty well this week. The Nun opened with a massive, about $54 million. That's like Conjuring numbers. And it's really kind of interesting because usually this first week after Labor Day, there's always a huge horror film. Last year it was It. This year it's The Nun. Next year it's going to be It Part 2. So I don't know. It's this one weekend always brings out the scary movie and it brings out the audience. In second place, Jennifer Garner in Peppermint did about $13.5 million, which is it did better than it was expected. And then those Crazy Rich Asians came in third, about 300,000 below Peppermint. In fourth place is The Meg with $6 million. And in fifth place, Searching. I had a couple people saw it that I know, and they said it's excellent. They said it's just a good thriller.
So I know, Adam, you said you're going to go see The Nun this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, being sick, I didn't want to go subject people to, one, all of my coughing, and two, all of my germs. I'm respectful when it comes to movies, so I didn't do that this weekend, but it's definitely on the hook for either this week or next weekend at the latest. So I'm excited. It looks good. I mean, we're talking about a little bit before we started, Blumhouse. It's just what they do. They're going to turn around, they're going to make a $20 million horror movie. It's going to be fun. It's going to be have its scares, and it's going to make a bunch of money. And this is just another run in that Conjuring line, Bob. So, I mean, good comparison there money-wise in terms of what it was doing, because this is – those movies are where this movie comes from.
You know, it's really funny is they're calling this the Conjuring universe, you know, just like the Marvel or the DC universe. So I have a feeling like every year we're just going to get something out of that Conjuring universe. I did see it over the weekend. It's really not that bad. Very creepy, very atmospheric. I expected probably a little bit more in the more scares, but it was good. It was good.
Yeah, the Conjuring movies and Annabelle and now The Nun, you're talking about movies that really do kind of rely on just an overall creep vibe, I think, much more than jump scares, which I think is why they're so successful, because it's not just cheap gotcha.
Yeah.
Definitely those, but they're not as prevalent as you would think in this type of movie.
But, you know, one of the things that I saw last week before The Nun came out, they, you know, Honest Trailer did The Conjuring 1 and 2. And surprisingly, everything that they said that you normally see in a Conjuring film showed up in this one. You have the long pauses in the dark and then something jumps out at you. It's just like, it was like textbook. It was really kind of interesting because they pretty much called every thing in the movie that I saw.
Well, yeah, no one kind of has a problem with Blumhouse doing what they do. It is, you know, is how they make movies. And they have a bit of a formula, which is okay. These things happen. As long as you keep doing it good and you do it well, there's nothing wrong with having a formula. It's when you start to get dull with it within that framework that people start to have a problem with. Oh, we've seen this kind of thing before. I mean, it's a horror movie. We've seen just about everything that you can do in a horror movie before. So as long as you do it well and you tell a good story and you have some scares, you know, that'll do the trick. I think the timing wise, Bob, you're talking about these movies coming out the weekend after Labor Day. So it's before that Halloween rush where you're going to have a bunch of horror movies, and it's after the, not totally after, but kind of the end of the summer blockbusters. So you're not competing with those super high dollar or high budget movies. I think it's a good spot for a horror movie tech personally. What do you guys think?
I'm not a huge horror movie guy. Like, I will go see them with other people if that's what they want to see. It's not that I dislike them, but just never been my thing. I also think I've just seen a lot of really bad horror movies sometimes. And I know that, like, there's so many horror movies just because they're cheap to make and they make a ton of money. So it is a good business model if you're going to try to maximize your investment on making movies and don't have a ton invested as far as creatively. Like, horror movie is the way to go. Not to say there's not a lot of great, and I've seen some great horror movies. I've seen movies that I loved a lot that were horror movies, but I don't know. I don't go out of my way to go see them unless people are like, this is something you must see, which then I will definitely go do.
You know, I got to jump in here really fast. Adam, this is not a Blumhouse movie.
Is it not?
It is not.
Oh, well, yeah, I am mistaken.
It's a James Wan.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not Blumhouse. So these movies have a little bit more, I guess, budget than the Blumhouse movies, but they both succeed in the same way. They scare the crap out of you.
Right. I thought they were Blumhouse and then Warner Brothers put them out. That's my mistake. I apologize, yeah. Mr. James Wan. You do a fantastic job. I think that's really what I was getting at.
And if we're, like I said, we're talking about horror movies. Have you guys seen the new preview for the new Halloween coming out in October?
I haven't, because you know me in previews. I'm going to see that movie. So I've stopped watching the previews for it because I want to leave as much out there for me as possible.
But you know what? I'm not worried about previews anymore. After the preview for Mission Impossible Fallout, there was stuff in that preview that was no way was that going to be in the movie. Like, there's that scene where the tanker truck comes at Tom Cruise. Where was that in the movie? It wasn't even there, you know? So I'm not worried about previews anymore because literally half the preview is not going to be in the movie. At least I think. But yeah, this one looks really good. It's getting really good reviews. I think it's already up in the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes, and you know, it's already getting good critic notice.
Not to derail it, but I honestly, until you just said it, and I remember vividly that truck scene in the trailers over and over again, being like, "What is this going to be?" And yeah. It didn't click with me until just now that, oh yeah, that totally was not in the movie, and I can't even in my head picture where it would have fit in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's not even a sequence in which that would fit. I mean, I guess it has to be part of the heist, like the whatever, where they're trying to steal the prisoner, but they're in the middle of a city, that entire thing. Like, when were they on a... That's curious.
Yeah, they're on a country road. That's a country road there when that scene occurs in the preview. You never know.
Fair enough. All right. Well, so Halloween's a little ways away. What else is coming up? Is there anything what's going to splash at the box office between now and whenever something else comes out, I guess? What's... Well,
2 weeks you get the 1-2 punch of Venom and A Star Is Born.
Oh, that's right. We do have Venom coming up, so.
Yeah. I don't know, but when I saw that preview here recently again at the theater, I don't know how well that's going to do. I just am not feeling getting a good feeling out of that movie.
I'm going to see it for
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever else it is, it's Spider-Man adjacent if it's not a Spider-Man movie, and it's Tom Hardy and he's dreaming. Yeah. So I'm going to go see it, but yeah, I don't know. I think it probably benefits from the fact that we are in, you know, the dead times of box office between now and pretty much Halloween, November. I mean, Halloween, Thanksgiving. So it may just make money because there's something else to see at the theater.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to do extremely well, but I think it's not going to have the legs that A Star Is Born is going to have. Cause I think every woman in the world is going to want to go see that because it's got Bradley Cooper and, you know, he's pretty dreamy too.
He is. You're not wrong, Bob.
Yeah. He's dreamier as a CGI raccoon too, but yeah, I think Star Is Born is going to have long legs at
the bottom. What are you guys thinking about for Venom though? I mean, are we talking Ant-Man and the Wasp money? Over 200 domestically?
Are we talking about over the that first weekend?
Or? No. I mean total. I don't think a Spider-Man movie is getting, other than the straight Spider-Man movies, are going to be getting over 100 million. But I mean, do you think Venom?
I think it's going to do 75 million opening weekend, and I think it'll probably do about 155, 60 overall.
Okay. Seems a little low.
I'm going to say, just because of the dearth of other things in the theater, I'm going to say 75 opening weekend, and I'm going to say, 220 to 25 life to over to overall domestic.
Okay. It'd be interesting to see where that is in the old Fox superhero movie money. Like, it'll be interesting to see where it ends up, I guess, is kind of what I'm thinking.
Well, it's on the record, so we'll come back to this.
I mean, I'm trying to think. So outside of the, well, this would be Sony, not Fox. Spider-Man.
Man, I'm just, see, I got my fuzzy head, you guys, I'm telling you.
Dang, so, that Florida State game's still messing with you.
So,
that's also true.
I guess I'm trying to think, Sony, outside of, I mean, what has Sony released non-animated that's big outside of, you know, the Spider-Man movies? Like, what other big franchises do they have?
Oh, God.
Did they have Fantastic Four?
Nope.
That's Fox.
See?
I thought that was Fox.
No, that the reboot, I think, was Sony.
Maybe it was Sony the whole time. So I guess, yeah, Fantastic Four.
If you're looking at just regular films, I mean, this summer, Equalizer.
No, Fantastic Four was 100% Fox every time.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay.
All four Fantastic Four movies were from Fox. The highest grossing one was the very first one, and it made $154. Its sequel made $131. And then the reboot made $56 million.
It was not good. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was not good.
It was the bastard child of Marvel.
Well, let's see. Let's go to Sony. Yeah, like if you look at Sony, well, let's see, time frame. Just, I mean, I guess this year alone, Sony is, they've had one 200 million plus movie, and that was Jumanji. Sorry, this is specifically January 1st of this year to September 9th of this year. So that technically came out last year, but if you count over the course of the year, everything else they've had has been Hotel Transylvania 3, Peter Rabbit, Equalizer 2, the Sicario sequel. Not a lot. All the money in the world was theirs, which I think they kind of took a willing loss on that one. And then last year they made $334 million on Spider-Man Homecoming, $169 during last year for Jumanji prior. So Jumanji made $170 million in the last week and a half of the year, which is pretty impressive, 2 weeks of the year. And then Baby Driver made $107, and then they didn't, out of the other 25 movies that were in theaters from Sony last year, none of them made more than $100 million at the box office during the calendar year 2017.
Yeah. Well, you know, one more thing also is because it's the end of the summer, we can go back and look at the box office for the summer, which is about a 14% higher than it was last year, too. Number one at the box office, and this is summer. I remember we had that little discussion before about Infinity Wars. Is it a summer movie or not? But I think this is taking it from May 1st to Labor Day. Number one at the box office was Incredibles 2 with $602 million. That's pretty amazing. Number two is Jurassic World with $415. And here's where Infinity War comes in. Third place, $340 million. But yeah, so that's like about $330 million just from that first week that didn't get counted into the summer. Fourth place was Deadpool 2. Fifth place was Ant-Man. Then it's Solo. Mission Impossible is in seventh, so $206 million. Eighth is Hotel Transylvania 3. Number nine is Ocean's 8. And number 10, Big Shark's always still in the money. The Meg, $123 million.
I'll be completely honest. I half expected Black Panther to be in the top 10 still.
Yeah, I know.
With just how much money it made overall. I just kept waiting. And Black Panther. I'm like, oh, okay, that checks out.
actually, during the summer, Black Panther made $10 million. 10 more million. So.
When did it come out? February?
February.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
$690 million was done before May 1st.
Before May 1st. Fair enough. All right. So previous box office, there you have it. Go see The Nun. Let us know what you think. Come comment on the old SoundCloud or the iTunes. Or I guess coming up, we've got Predator, I think is really the only other thing on the docket coming soon. Reviews are coming out. It's coming open. It will be opening as this is posting. Mixed reviews, I think, would be the best. Metacritic's got it around a 53, 56. Rotten Tomatoes around a 40. I don't think that's unexpected. It's a Predator movie. But I'm still going to see it, I think, probably. Yeah.
What are we looking for? Are we looking for a Predator movie to, you know, change the way we see action films? No, we're not. No. I'm not anyway. I'm looking for funny jokes. You know, I'm looking for some good action. And a
little bit of gore.
Yeah, I'm looking for a giant alien ripping people's heads off. This is what happens.
And it has
with all that.
And it has predator dogs.
It does indeed have predator dogs. So hopefully maybe some of us will make it to the theater this weekend and have something to report back on, but there's just not much out there to see. I think most of the buzz this last week or so has been around upcoming movies and stuff like that. So obviously Entertainment Weekly had a big cover story on Captain Marvel. So lots of production stills from Captain Marvel, including showing Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers with her, you know, her Kree Star Force team. We see Dijmon Houston in there, returning from his role from the first Guardians of the Galaxy. We see Lee Pace in there is running the destroyer. We're going to have a digitally de-aged Nick Fury, a digitally de-aged Agent Coulson, and a bunch of other blue-skinned Kree people just doing Kree things out in the space. So, I mean, here's the thing. Outside of just being another Marvel movie, and there haven't been any Marvel movies that weren't, you know, minimum of slightly better than average at worst and amazing at best. Like, there's no way this movie, I mean, I know people talk about Marvel fatigue, but I can't imagine this movie not doing well. And then you add in the fact that it is going to be the first female-led, female-titled, you know, female in the title of the movie, who is the main character movie. I think this is going to be a big one. Here's hoping it's good enough to have legs, but I have high hopes for it. And I actually, you know, love Brie Larson.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, The Wasp was the first woman.
No, I mean, she was the first woman to make the title, but she wasn't the headliner. She wasn't the star. You
know, Wonder Woman says hello.
Yeah, of the Marvel Universe.
Of the Marvel Universe. Okay. You didn't have that part in. I assume that you're talking about.
Did I not say that? I apologize.
I didn't have that in.
We also had Catwoman was out there and Elektra.
We don't want to remember those.
I don't know if we need to talk about either of those two films.
Specifically, we're talking about the Marvel Universe. I'm also, you know, honestly, one of the things about this movie I'm most excited about is I really, really like Lee Pace. I've always been a fan of Lee Pace, especially ever since Pushing Daisies. And I'm glad he's going to get a chance to play an earlier, less psychotic version of Ronan the Accuser and get to hopefully show off his chops a little bit more rather than just brood and say ominous things on screen, because Lee Pace has chops, and I'd like to see him do a slightly more nuanced version of Ronan. Not that there was anything wrong with Ronan the Accuser. He filled the role he needed to fill in that movie, but he's got an interesting backstory, and I think it'd be cool to see Lee Pace get to do a little bit more than just look angry.
I have no problem with Lee Pace doing just saying ominous lines. He does it so well.
I don't know. He's fun in a lot of stuff. I just love him. I will always love him as the kind of quirky, aw shucks pie shop owner from Pushing Daisies, and his weird, slick, super kind of sketchy guy from Halt and Catch Fire was also really fun. So any excuse to get more Lee Pace, I'm 100% on board with. So, but I'm looking forward to that. Also, we've been having there's been leaks upon leaks upon leaks, how much of them are true and how much of them are not, around Avengers 4, around the reshoots, around who's really dead, who's actually alive. I've tried my best not to click on any of them, and most places have been a pretty good job of, like, the headline says, you know, new leaks confirm this person's actually still going to come back. I think we already kind of knew most everyone was going to come back, so I'm not really digging it. I mean, I guess, are you guys digging into any of the buzz around Avengers 4, or just kind of like letting it sit?
Yeah, I'm just it happens. I'm not going to be able to stop it, but I'm not digging into it. I mean, it's going to I'll just take it like everybody else.
I won't read them, and I just scroll by fairly quick. Anything that says Avengers these days, I'm just moving on by. I don't need to deal with that anymore. Captain Marvel, on the other hand, I am digging into that because I think you're right, Tyler. I think I don't see how this doesn't make all of the money. And I'm thinking Black Panther size. Like, yeah. I just don't see how it just doesn't crush for a long time. I mean, Marvel have had to lay an egg, which, like you said, they haven't done really. I think Ant-Man and the original Ant-Man may be the lowest.
Actually, I thought it was Thor, one of the fours.
Yeah, I'll buy Thor Dark World maybe, but either way, you know, those totals are still pretty high. But yeah. I don't see how this doesn't make Black Panther type money. Just
I don't think it. Yeah. I don't think it's going to do Black Panther money. I think Black Panther was such a touchstone movie. I mean, it, you know, there was so much around that film. I was thinking people were going to go see Ant-Man and the Wasp because it was just right after Avengers. It may get a little bit of story that was to what's going on, stuff like that. It really didn't happen. I think it's going to do well, but I'm not thinking Black Panther money. I think people are going to wait for Black Panther money for the next Avengers.
Yeah. I mean, the only way it's not, it's going to make a ton of money. And I think the only way that it doesn't make, I don't know, Black Panther Monthly is a high bar to set, but it's definitely going to make some serious money. I don't know. I'm curious to see. I think the only way that it doesn't is if it's just not good, which even the worst Marvel movies have been better than average, I think, compared to some stuff that makes it out there these days.
Y'all crap on Thor Dark World a lot, and I enjoy that movie.
Yeah. It's not a bad movie. I think it just, like, it has a lot of going nowhere. I don't know. I don't know the best to describe it, but the plot's fairly, I don't know. I'm also excited to see, like, like we talked about, Marvel has gone out and made creative choices when it comes to directors and stars. They've gone out and found some people that you wouldn't typically think. I think this might be their biggest, like, wow, that's really who they went with. And that is the directing, editing, you know, team of Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who, if you're not a big movie person, have probably don't know them. I think most people, if they do know them from the indie flick Half Nelson, starring Ryan Gosling when he was the druggy teacher, which is an amazing movie.
That is a really good movie.
An amazing movie. They've also made Sugar, Mississippi Grind, and It's a Funny Kind of Story, the one with Emma Roberts and Zach Galifianakis, which was also a pretty interesting movie. I would like to see what their take would be on it. And Kevin Feige obviously talked super highly of them after they were hired on. So,
what were they hired? What do they have a project, or they were just okay? You're directing.
They were hired to make this movie. I mean,
which one? Oh,
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Oh, okay. Never mind.
The hell are we talking about, Bob?
I just don't know. Adam is he's contagious. I've just caught some of his crap.
Aha, I figured it out. No, so you think that's a bigger kind of really decision?
Well, who's
Taika Waititi?
Yeah, that one is kind of a bigger. I think that one's a bigger one.
Taika's a reach. I would hazard to guess that Taika was slightly more of a household name than Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. It's possible that's just because I'm a fan of Taika's work.
But I don't know if he's a household name so much as
Zealand. New Zealand he is, but not here. He's only, I mean, he, what was the one movie he just did? He did that, but most people know, the vampire flick.
Yeah, What We Do in the Shadows. Hunt for the Wilder People.
Hunt for the Wilder People, right.
I mean,
Eagle versus Shark.
Done a bunch of stuff, and it's all stuff we've seen, obviously, because we are into that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I don't even know. Even What We Do in Shadows, when it hit Netflix and everybody was like, oh, my God, you guys need to watch this movie. I know people who still were like, yeah, I'm not watching that.
It was great. I loved it.
Oh, it's fantastic. He's an amazing director. I enjoy all of his stuff, but I don't know if he was as big of a household name. I'm just saying.
All right. I will
positing another opinion out there.
Yes.
What's the word I want to look for? I will concede that they are equally as big a reaches for directors. I'm not going to let you put Taika way above. I don't know. It's possible I'm totally biased just because I knew who Taika Waititi was. These two people. And not that I didn't know who these two people were, but I think the last thing they did of big consequence was Half Nelson. Like some of the stuff they
did. Yeah, and that was like a dozen years ago.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's kind of a funny story, and some of the other stuff they've done since then has been good, but I think they really have one, you know, big notch on their belt, and it is Half Nelson. And Half Nelson was huge critically, huge at festivals, like won a lot of awards.
Yeah. But again, 10 years ago.
When did that movie come out? Half Nelson came out in, released theatrically in 2006. So yeah, 12 years ago. Nicely done, Bob. I mean, nicely done, Adam. Sorry, I tried to give your credit to Bob. I apologize.
Giving away all my kudos. What the heck? First, I got you to concede. Not that I was right, but that I had a potentially valid point.
Yeah.
I'm going to give my kudos away. What the heck, Ty?
All right. Well, like out of those, I'm now in my head just going through all the Marvel directors, and now I need to pull up a list and we'll see if there's anyone else on there. Because a lot of them are, you know, the Jon Favreau's of the world, the Kenneth Branaghs of the world. James Gunn, say what you will about James Gunn or not, but James Gunn he had done some big budget stuff prior to this. So let's take a look here and let's see who's next. So now that I go down the list, though, I feel like we sometimes have a tendency to gloss over just how well-oiled the Marvel machine is. Because I'm looking at some of these people and realizing, I mean, we know them now, but I'm kind of curious, did we know them? So Thor the Dark World was Alan Taylor, who was a big guy on television. He had done Deadwood, he'd done West Wing, he'd done Mad Men, Bored to Death. Like, he'd done a lot of stuff there. Game of Thrones in the first season, but didn't really know anything, wasn't really known inside of movies until, obviously, Thor. Peyton Reed was a fairly well-known guy. I mean, he did Yes Man. He did Bring It On. He did The Breakup, Down With Love. So Peyton Reed.
Tell which Marvel movie they did too, Tyler. That way people.
Sorry, Peyton Reed did both Ant-Man movies.
So. Okay, there we go. Took over for Edgar Wright. Right.
So Peyton Reed was a known quantity, I think, Hollywood-wise. we get into Doctor Strange with Scott Derrickson, who possibly you don't know unless you're a horror movie guy. So horror movie-wise, he'd done The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, and Deliver Us from Evil, which were all fairly successful horror movies. So, but if you outside
those of the were all pretty good horror movies, yeah.
Outside of the horror genre, not really well known. John Watts was, I guess, indie director at best. He had worked at the Onion News Network, but he did prior to Spider-Man Homecoming and now the new Spider-Man Far From Home, he did Clown, which is that really fucked up horror movie with the guy who puts on the clown costume that may or may not be the skin of a demon or some stuff and starts eating children. And it's real bad. And I don't know. I mean, the movie bad is, I don't know if the word, it's real messed up.
It's disturbing.
Yeah. The movie is not okay. Yes, it is. It is enjoyable for what it is. If that's what you like, definitely watch it.
Yeah. And then he did that cop car movie, the one with Kevin Bacon. And the kids who like steal the cop car and the weird.
Yeah. And that did really well.
It did. And then Adam posits the Russo brothers, but I feel like in Hollywood, at least when it came to television, like they were a known quantity, well-known, having worked on Arrested Development, having worked on Community, sure. Having done a ton of, different pilots across town. Like they were really well-known as pilot directors. They've directed the pilots of any number of popular shows. So
yeah, I would say though that there is something different in directing a full length motion feature than there is to half hour TV shows.
They had done You, Me, and Dupree, which was a critically acclaimed smash hit if I've ever seen one.
No. But no,
I honestly don't know if I've ever seen that movie. I think I've seen bits of it. I don't know if I've ever watched it.
I think what you see here, other than I mean, you mentioned John Favreau and Kenneth Branagh, is that what we're talking about are known quantities put in charge of something completely different than they've done before. So you're talking about horror directors, you're talking about TV directors, you're talking about people who don't live in the action, big budget blockbuster realm. I mean, they're not going out and getting Michael Bay or James Cameron or... you know, any of these people you think of as these people that are routinely given $150 million of studio money to go make a movie with, they go find people who make television. And I think that really shows because there is a difference between making a TV show and making a movie, but they found very, very good storytellers. And I think that's something that they've done a really, really good job of is finding people who can tell a story and giving them these, you know, almost snippets of this larger universal story that they're trying to tell with all the Marvel movies kind of pieced together there. And so it I think it works very well because they're almost episodes of a running season just in full length feature film runtime as opposed to 30-minute TV show runtime.
Yeah, I definitely think so. But then they obviously did ones where they matched director, I think, to what they were after. Kenneth Branagh, obviously, Mr. Shakespeare, to the first Thor movie, which Thor is nothing if not Shakespearean, at least how he was always written in the comics, and they definitely get that feel. I think the best match of director to content 100% has to be Joe Johnston for Captain America. Because if there's one guy who knows how to make a pulpy superhero flick about an all-American good-looking dude punching the shit out of some Nazis, it's Joe Johnston, because goddamn Matt loved me some Rocketeer. So
you know, one of the things also is, you know, Marvel went out and they got all these, like I said, you know, small commodity directors. I think mainly because one of it is if you get one of these bigger, larger than life kind of directors, if you get someone like a Michael Bay or someone like that, would they play along with the whole storyline, or would they want to have some control over that?
Well, I think that's where you ran into the problem with Edgar Wright and Ant-Man, was that he wanted to do more and was kind of being held in with, well, we've got stuff that needs to happen after this movie and you can't you can't do that, or you know, he left for creative differences, whatever that ended up meaning. But I have no doubt that it was definitely something that Edgar wanted to take it somewhere, and they're like, you can't do that. Sorry.
Yeah,
I agree. And it wasn't just music. I'm sure they wanted him to use music.
Fair enough. I mean, the amount of column inches and ink that's been spent on, you know, why or how or whatever Marvel Cinematic Universe is successful, regardless of what it is or who they get or whatever, I'm at this point, they are incapable of a complete and utter failure. Like, they're going to have some hits and misses, but even their misses are, there are studios out there that would kill for Marvel's, you know,
first weekend.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, kill for Marvel's worst performing movies.
Yeah.
They have movies that are disappointments for them that make more movies than some studios make in a year. So anyway, Marvel movies, Captain Marvel, a lot of stuff out there. We'll all go see it regardless of what it is or who it is or how it does. So I don't know. Sometimes we talk about it a lot, but it's, I don't know. They've got it. They have created a machine that prints money and doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon. So what else is going on? Did anyone pick up Spider-Man, the game? I want to, I just don't have time to play it right now, but it's getting just crazy good reviews.
I did, but I, like I said, I put it in the PS4, got it downloaded. I haven't come back to it to play it. It's just, it took 40 minutes to download it, and I'm just like, I'm going to bed. So I might look at it tonight after I'm done here.
Bob, how did you get a new video game and not play it? That's never been a thing I've been able to do. Even because midnight releases, like I sit there and I let it download and I play until 3 o'clock in the morning because I am an idiot.
That is because, Adam, I picked it up on Friday. And then I was on call all weekend, so I didn't get wasn't even close to a PS4. So I had to just kind of dream about it sitting there next to my television. And when I got back into town yesterday, last night, that's when I put it in and still didn't get to play it. So.
All right. I'm going to give you a pass on that one. I haven't picked it up yet, Tyler. I definitely am going to, though. I've got friends that have played Sunken hours and hours into it already, and they've said that it is the best open world game that they've played, which is pretty high praise, because this most recent Assassin's Creed Origins was fantastic, and in terms of its open worldness was really, really good. So that is high praise, I think. See, you know, these are people who also, like you and I, have purchased Skyrim for, you know, multiple systems and everything. So I'm really excited about it, and I can't wait to be Spider-Man, because I think they finally got it right. It looks that way for sure.
I'm excited. I'm definitely going to pick it up at some point. I don't see myself having any time to play it anytime in the next couple weeks, but I would have to go on a work trip. Maybe I'll pack up the PS4 in the backpack and buy it and just play it in the hotel for a week. That might be a plan.
That's a fantastic idea. Yes. And that would have been my suggestion to YouTube, Bob. Take the PS4 with you. It travels. It's super good at that. Well, I've been playing the Destiny 2 release, Year 2 for Destiny 2, Forsaken. Tyler, I know you've kind of just moved away from Destiny altogether. It's worth it for the bow alone.
I mean, I've heard really good things about this expansion. I'm tired of having to buy a game, get burned out on the game because it's not great, wait for an expansion, then wait for a second expansion, be like, no, got it figured out this time. Like, they did that with the first one, and don't get me wrong, The Taken King was amazing. I had to buy, like, two other games before I could play that one. Like, just, where was this when the game came out, I guess?
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. Yeah, I still did it, though. I have no... I have no defense of myself, Tyler, but I've done it. I've played it, and it has been a lot of fun. And the nice thing is, you know, my friends that I play Destiny 1 with, we've got a large clan, and they're all back. They're all back into it. We're all playing again. And so it's really good. Looking forward to the raid coming out on Friday. So Destiny, Bungie, I guess, came out and said they have a belt, like a championship belt, like a wrestling or boxing championship belt, that the team gets the first worldwide clear will be able to get. And so that's it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and how quickly people are able to get through this one. Taken King, it took people forever to get through that, but the Destiny 2 raid, the Leviathan, people got through very quickly. Same day.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I remember Taken King raid dropping and people just sinking hours and hours into it.
Yeah, it took days, yeah.
They've managed to keep people on the hook this long, but I feel like money-making wise, it would be better to just open with a good one and then just make more good ones. I don't know. But
I'm sure that was the plan.
I like the idea of Destiny. It still to this day, I think, has some of the best, like, I don't want to get cliche with my terms around games, but it has the best, like, first person, like, gun feel of any
game. Its gunplay is fantastic.
Gunplay feels so good. Like,
yes, it does.
Getting a hand cannon and just going around and headshotting Covenant. I mean, headshotting people. It's fantastic. It feels so good. The story is, while a giant clusterfuck, interesting to some extent. But it's just
much more streamlined for Destiny 2 than Destiny 1 for the story.
Yeah, I watch it. I bought the first one, got into it, then fell out of love, then came back, then left again, then came back again, bought Destiny 2, played it for a while, got burned out, left, and have not come back since, and probably don't have any desire to. I don't know how they continue to, I don't know. I'm saying this while I'm having the same conversation with someone about the newest WoW expansion, around how, like, they learned all the wrong things from the last expansion and applied those and cut all the good stuff, so it is what it is. Anytime you do these MMOs and you have to please a lot of people and fill a lot of time, but I don't know. Every time I read an article about the development of anything Bungie related, it always reads just like, how do they let this happen? They're Bungie. I thought they were the chosen one. I don't know. Maybe I'm totally off base. I'm sure they'll totally nail it in Destiny 3 in a year.
It'll be 2 years for Destiny 3, and they will, they'll make the same mistakes. I'm 100% certain of that. They will put out a game for the first year that is just as broken as the Destiny 2 was for its first year, and just as broken as Destiny 1 was for its first year. I have no doubt about that.
And Tyler will buy it. He'll play it for a little while, then he'll be tired of it, and he'll put it away.
Yeah, I'm done with Destiny. I'm out.
He's out?
It looks cool. It looks fun, and I've heard good things about The Forsaken, but I'm tired of... I mean, I spent over $100 on Destiny 1, and that's just buying the game and the expansions. And then, like, if you didn't have, you had to rebuy the game to get the one of the, I mean, it was a whole thing, and it was, because which one was it? It was wasn't Taken King. Which one did you have to, like, if you wanted to buy the expansion, you had to buy the game again?
Well, so for Taken King, it was Taken King. They had a huge problem where there were exclusives that only came with buying the whole thing. You couldn't get those exclusives if you just bought the update. And so anybody who had played the first year and had spent the $60 on the game and the $30 on the season pass, or the $40 to buy the two DLCs individually,
got none of the cool stuff.
Well, eventually they fixed it, but I mean, they, for the pre-order, their pre-order numbers sucked for the Taken King, because they totally were like, hey, look at all this cool stuff you can get if you spend the $120 to buy all of the previous content and the new update. And everybody was like, what the hell?
No.
I've already spent $100.
Thank you. Yeah. Fair enough. So, yeah. So, Forsaken, go check it out.
Forsaken? It's good.
As it turns out, there are still people playing the game and enjoying it, despite all of it, the contrary. So,
because when they get it, though, it is really good.
Yeah.
And so far, at least, it seems like they've gotten it back.
That's good. Hopefully,
maybe that continues.
Maybe one of these days I'll get super bored, or I'll get burned out on Battle for Azeroth and need something to scratch that itch, and we'll check it out. But as many problems as there are with Battle for Azeroth, I'm in deep. I've got the WoW bug again. I raided last week, probably raid again this week.
Oh, yeah?
But there are definitely a lot of... I don't want to get in, like, inside baseball with it, because a lot of it is very, like, specific complaints. But, yeah, it's definitely... it's definitely a... Whether how much truth to it is or not, obviously Blizzard's never confirmed, but there's definitely a conspiracy theory amongst many WoW players that there are two separate WoW development teams at Blizzard, Team A and Team B, and Team A does the even number expansions and Team B does the odd numbered expansions, starting somewhere around Wrath. So Wrath Lich King, fantastic expansion, generally considered to be one of the high points of WoW. One after that, Cataclysm, kind of a mess, not really well thought of. Odd numbered again, Mists of Pandaria, super awesome, fantastic, good. Warlords of Draenor, not so much. It's kind of like the Star Trek problem, if you will, the odd and evens. Then Legion, pretty cool. Battle for Azeroth. I mean, we're only a couple weeks in, but so far, like, there are huge chunks of it. They're just like, why does this even exist other than to just be filler to, like, have you? It's very
great. You got to have something to do to justify spending that money. And, I mean, the funny thing is, I bet if we went back a couple weeks to when that launched, you were pretty on board with it, man.
I was. That was before I'd played it. So, and here's the thing. I will say, the one thing I will say about it is, the actual the trip from 110 to 120, so like the actual zones and doing the storylines and doing like the quests, not any of the, because like that's the big thing about these expansions now, is they're 100% built for people who play the game to do the end game, to do the end game stuff. Original vanilla WoW, like, it, there was a ton of game there until you ever got to any of the end game stuff. And the end game stuff was for what considered hardcore gamers. Now, if you buy an expansion, you get 10 levels, if you're sometimes 5 levels of single player content. And then if you want to do anything else, it requires you to get into groups, to do raids, to do that kind of stuff. But the first week of this was me just leveling from 110 to 120, doing the new zones, learning the new storylines, Zandalar and Kul Tiras. That stuff was all awesome. The new zones are super beautiful. The storylines are fun and interesting. It's a lot of the now what do I do stuff that's been kind of like, this is a slog.
Well, and that's what's always kept me out of WoW. So I first got in with Wrath of the Lich King, bought the, you know, not collector's edition, but I bought whatever edition gave you everything before then for one price.
The battle chest or whatever they used to call it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. That's what it was. Battle chest. Got that. And played the hell out of it. And I mean, the great thing about that is you've got, you know, you had, what was it, 80 or 70, the level cap back then.
So for Wrath Lich King, it would have been, I think it was either 70 or 80.
Yeah, something like that, either way. But, you know, starting a completely fresh character, never played before. Dude, I had months of gameplay that I could play, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. I played all the damn time. My wife was in grad school, so she was studying and working a lot. And so, I mean, I'd go to work, I'd come home, I'd play, or, I mean, when I was at Best Buy, I'd play and then go into work, whatever it was. I mean, I was playing anytime I wasn't working or sleeping, I was probably playing WoW. And then I got to the end game stuff, or even some of the higher level instances, not even raids, but even some of the higher level instances, just to get the gear to be able to continue to level. I'd never played before, so I didn't know how to do them. And so I didn't know, you know, I didn't have my character spec this the correct way. And so I'd get into a group and people would be carrying me and I'd die for sure. And I would let everybody know that I'd never done this before. And so you just need to tell me what to do. And sure as shit, every single time somebody gets pissed off and leaves. And then we spend another 45 minutes finding another person to get in to do it with us. It just became such a minefield trying to get any kind of group together back then in WoW for sure. And I never was able to get past that part. I'd always get to where you needed people, Tyler, like you were talking about, and just could never do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. I've always, especially since Wrath of Lich King, gotten into the theory crafting part of it and the min maxing and getting your spec just right. But, and I've been lucky. Like, the group I'm with now, the guild I'm in, the raid group I've been in, I've been with two expansions, but prior to that, Wrath of Lich King, I had a pretty good guild that I hung out with, and we had a pretty good time, and on and off have jumped around to other guilds and played with friends. And almost every time I get back in the game, it's because friends are like, hey, I'm getting the expansion, you should come back. I'm like, no, you don't understand, I have a problem. And then 2 weeks later, they've quit already again, and I'm like, getting my third character to max level and being like, I thought you guys wanted to play this. What are you talking about? I was like, no. We just kind of wanted to play. You, what you're doing is something else. So it's fine. I get it. But we'll see. If it's still, I don't know. I could see myself not sticking with it as long as I stuck with. Because Legion, I stuck with pretty heavy the first year and a half and only kind of bailed out the last, like, year to 9 months of it. Basically, I bailed right before the last raid came out. So I did all the content leading up to the raid. I did the whole raid, the whole first raid. Then there was, like, a mini raid. And then the second raid, I guess, because there was like first raid, then there was like this little mini three boss raid, then there was another big raid, and then by the time the third raid came out, I had quit. But I had sunk many hours into those first two and a half raids. So this one, I could see myself quitting sooner than that, but we'll see how it goes, or just becoming significantly more casual. But the way I play the game, it's tough to either, like, you either play it or you don't. Like, there's no, like, I'll just play a little bit. So
you can't casually raid. You got to be in it.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll see. Other games coming out, I guess. I don't know if we've talked about it or not. I know I'm super pumped about it. Did anyone watch the gameplay trailer for Cyberpunk 2077 that came out a week or so ago?
Whew. That game's going to be,
oh my god,
really, really good.
My body is ready. It almost just makes me want to play Witcher 3 again. So
right. Oh, and speaking of Witcher, we had Netflix.
Henry Cavill. Did we talk? I feel like we talked about this.
We talked about that last week.
Did you guys talk about that
last week? We did. So I'm excited about that. Henry, I don't care. Whatever. Just make the show. Cast whoever you want. Like, Henry Cavill, I like a lot. He'll do fine at it, but just make. I just need to see it. I need it to exist. Although we didn't talk, there's been some uproar now because there's rumors based on a casting call that they may be trying to cast someone who is, you know, not Caucasian to play Ciri. And of course, the internet, in its true, totally reasonable fashion, lost its effing mind and decided, and in the guise of total rationalness and truth being true to the whatever. Oh my god. The internet's the worst, and it's the best worst thing we've ever invented as a species. Just
we're gonna get. I mean, just put Zazie Beetz in there and call it good. Let's just. I mean,
there you go.
Keep steering down that path.
Just turn hard into it. Just turn into it real hard. Uh-huh. So that's the thing. Yeah. So well done, internet, for being, you know, angry. And here's the thing: if you have, you know, some deep seated, you know, obsession with the source material and really think it has to be an ashen-haired, pale-skinned girl, fine, whatever, but stop trying to couch your super misogyny and your super angriness in anything other than, like, casual racism. Like, there's none of them. It's like, you don't even, it's, here's the thing, like, if you were really serious about it, you would be able to write sentences without that much vitriol. You obviously have some other ulterior. I don't want to go down this gross trolley rabbit hole, but god, they're the worst.
We're there now, we're good.
Oh, I'm just getting angry just thinking about it.
Don't do that. Go to your happy place, Tyler. What are you reading right now?
This isn't a happy place. I'm finishing the most recent October day book by Anna McGuire, and listen, Toby has never really caught a break in any of these books, but this one has gone to some really dark places. Shannon McGuire is also a master of just, here's a twist in the middle of the book that made everything so much worse than you already thought it was. So that's always super fun. She is the queen of the gunt punch. So they're great books and I enjoy them and they're a fun read. The other thing is I'm kind of have to stew in this one because this is a series that this is the 12th book, 13th book. And I read the first 11 in like 2 weeks. So, like, just flew through them because a friend recommended to them and got really into them. And there's this, something about, like, getting into a series and, like, knocking all of it out in a super short period of time. It's just one big story and it all runs together. And, like, big plot threads from one book get resolved, like, 2 days later and it's not a huge deal. I've been having to stew in the – because, like, things didn't end on super great notes in the last book. Like the story was resolved, the heroine won, but, like, things were in a bad – like, the status quo had changed and it was not in the for the better. And the last one, and this one just picks up where that one left off and just gets, you know, worse. I mean, all good fiction requires its protagonist to suffer. Like, if there's no suffering, there's no plot. But some days, Toby just needs to have something good happen to her. I feel for that girl. So, But yes, that's what I'm reading. There's a few other things coming up soon. It's kind of book season. Like September, November is really book season, so there's more stuff on the horizon that I'm looking super forward to. I feel like something else comes out this month, and then what? I'm trying to think what else is coming book-wise that I am real pumped about. I feel like that's the wrong list. I've already read all of those books. Upcoming books list on Amazon. What? Oh, God. October 31st, finally, Seth Dickinson's sequel to The Traitor Cormorant comes out. And you talk about a book that's so good and will make you so angry at the same time. It is that book. Pick it up, read it. The sequel to it comes out October 30th. November, we finally get another Rivers of London book from Ben Aronofsky. I love those books. The PC Peter Grant books, or Rivers of London, depending on what you how you do them. October, we also John Scalzi's sequel in his The Interdependency series. I really liked the first book, although in non-John Scalzi fashion. The first one, which was The Collapsing Empire, definitely was one of the first books of his that I read that, like, at the end of it, it was 100% like, here's the prologue to this ongoing, this upcoming series that's going. Like, it ends on nothing's resolved. It, like, sets up all these things in motion and then says, cool, that's the end. Tune in next year for the next one. So it was still amazing. I still loved it. And I love John Scalzi, but hopefully this one is a little bit more of a self-contained story. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. I feel a little bit better now. Thank you, Adam.
no problem, buddy.
Let's do some final thoughts. Let's get out of here. We've rambled on without Iggy to steer the ship. Sometimes we just talked about Marvel for 30 minutes. So
hey, we do our own thing.
Yeah. If he leaves us
alone, we could do whatever we want.
God, if only. But seriously, let's do some final thoughts. Let's get out of here. Let's go to bed. I'm tired. Adam, what do you got for us?
I've got just enjoy things, guys. The weather is changing here. Highs were only in the 70s so far yesterday and today. Now they ramp back up a little bit, but the weather is changing. I'm going to recommend that as it does it and starts to get cooler where you are, that you get yourself a hammock. Find a couple of trees, string it up, read a book. Anything will do. I've been rereading Star Wars books because I got a Star Wars tattoo recently. And they're fantastic. I've enjoyed all of the new stuff that they've put out. And reading some of the Legends stories as well. So pick up some books, read them, go outside. For our friends on the Southeast Atlantic coast, Mid-Atlantic, you guys be safe this weekend. We got Hurricane Florence heading your way. Lots of rain, lots of water, lots of storm surge. It looks gross. Be careful, please. If you're in an evacuation zone, get out. My family's from Florida, so we don't mess around with hurricanes. Well, Floridians mess around with hurricanes, but they're all crazy. You guys are normal up there. So if you're in an evacuation zone, get out, be safe. Make sure you have plenty of extra supplies and things like that. So, everybody else, if you can enjoy the outside this weekend, go do it a little bit and get some reading done. If you are in the path of the hurricane, be safe. We'll be thinking about y'all.
Indeed. It looks like it's going to get pretty rough here in a minute or two. So for me, I mean, I already ran down the books that are coming up, but it is definitely book season, getting into fall. There's nothing better than sitting on the porch and it's a little cool out, some coffee or some tea, read a book. Like I said, a bunch of another ones coming out, but definitely pick up the newest October Days book from Shannon McGuire. It is quite good. Other than that, I will be spending most of my free time continuing to feed my relapsing WoW addiction. So if you need me, that is where I'll be. Other than that, I don't have anything else unless you guys... Final send-off thoughts, and I guess we just did final thoughts, but...
Are you still playing a Pandaren? Do you have a literal panda on your back?
No.
When it comes to WoW?
No. Okay. First of all, I am the best class in the best race, and that is Troll Shaman. not a question. Troll shamans are the best. Although once I can become a Zandalari troll, I'll probably do that because they're like the best race, only better. So
right,
they trolls that get to stand up straight. But yeah, troll enhancement shaman. Don't be stupid. The only class and only race there is. But yeah, I do need to start making an alt though. I don't know. I don't know if I want to wait until Zandalar to make a new class and troll. I don't know what class I want to play next. Shaman's a little bit broken right now. Not terribly, but a little bit. So we'll see. Regardless, that has been another week of the Nerdcast from Project Nerd. We will be back next week on the same nerd time, the same nerd channel. Until then, all you beautiful nerds, stay beautiful. Goodbye.